We've been painted by Michelangelo. Shakespeare's written sonnets about us. Zombie Takeout has reviewed us. We're not supposed to feel emotion or show any feelings. Muses are supposed to inspire.
And welcome to episode 487 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's movie from 1980, Xanadu. This is our tribute to Olivia Newton-John, suggested by Bodo. Without any further ado, on to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Glitz. Get some at your local franchised Glitz dealer.
And also brought to you by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. What the fuck did he ever do to you? All right, so we have a young warrior.
Just go ahead and
come out and paint.
He wanted that for a title, and it really wasn't going to work without the vocalization. So
now that I think about it, it doesn't work without the bottles clanging together either. But that would have been my movie. Like while he's painting, they're challenging him to a fight. He's like, okay. All right, so we have the young artist who tried to make it out on his own, not to do the commercial route. But when he finally gets everything set aside, he has no idea what he wants to do.
The artist is played by Michael Beck, hence the warrior is reference.
Well, yeah, he's the lead warrior. And I guess this was the first movie he did after that, huh? And so he swallows his pride and goes back to his old job. And but meanwhile, there are these muses that suddenly come to life and come to our planet. And one of them, of course, pretty much stalks our young artist, who they play up his looks entirely too much in the movie, but, you know.
And in an earlier version of the script, it was made clear that he painted the mural that they came out of. There was just a vague reference in the movie.
Oh, okay. That would have, you know what, that might have helped a little bit.
Yeah.
That might have explained a little bit more of this. And this needed a lot of explanation, and they're leaving us out on our own here.
I kind of like that about it, actually.
They so the muse pretty much stalks him a little bit and inspires him to quit his job, and then inspires him to fulfill the dream of this other old guy that she once was with, to open a club.
That she was the muse for, just to be clear.
Yes. Yeah, he was kind of this big clarinet player back in the day, and now he's just, you know, uninspired and
played by the late great Gene Kelly.
Yes, and he had the muse with him in his band pretty much, and then kind of chased her off and was kind of living an empty, wealthy life until the muse pretty much came back to him through. I keep forgetting our hero's name.
Sonny is back.
Danny Sonny.
Is Kelly.
Yes.
Kira is the muse played by, of course, by Olivia Newton-John.
And so, yeah, right. It's his dream, and they pretty much work to fulfill it. And they open this lavish club that features all sorts of music and dance. And the problem is that Sonny has fallen in love with the muse, and the muse with Sonny, and that is forbidden, and she has to go away, and he has to convince her to come back, and of course, hilarity ensues.
And it just occurred to me, Sonny's dream was to be taken seriously as an artist. Nothing really gets done there.
Right, right.
He kind of just helps Danny, and that's it.
Right. There is nothing of his dreams that are fulfilled in this. This was all for Danny. Sonny is just a, I don't know what Sonny is in this, you know, what Sonny gets out of this. He gets to glimpse the artistic world and not have to put up with his shitty boss anymore.
He is a tool of the muse.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Now, the opening titles, as much of this movie, just kind of screams 80s.
I don't know. I think it's still very much 70s.
There's a lot of stuff that it's actually a few years ahead on. Like, a lot of the styling and the coloration really kind of screams like 84.
And maybe they worked off of it. And really, that opening number is, I mean, it looks really good. Like, the dancers, the low-budget effect, you know, it was low-budget, but it was an effective visual effect with the glow, the aura around them all.
And I was very relieved that they weren't singing. This is absolutely a case of expectation management for me. Because I came into this movie expecting Flash Gordon meets Starlight Express.
You definitely got half of it, though.
And it wasn't that. There were only a couple of really proper musical numbers. A lot of them were really just dance numbers, and I love dance, so it kind of worked out for me.
I was kind of, in that first number, I was like, you know what, maybe this is going to be better than I thought it was going to be, and maybe this is going to be something I could actually enjoy and dig. And then they started running around the country.
There is a lot of cheats. You just kind of have to accept it's early 80s, you know, mainstream film. There's a lot of cheese.
So I'm just like, what is this? And when I was explaining this to Mrs. Scotto earlier tonight, and I'm like, it's like it was directed by somebody who had, you know, ADHD or something. That like we've got this great number, but now let's just go super insane where they're running around the world. And she was like, or they were on cocaine.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, that was totally it. These motherfuckers were totally
probably
coked
much
out of
more
their
likely. But then there's other moments like that opening dance number or the floating paper that leads up to it that just take way too long. Because I'm totally down for the insane stuff. I enjoy that.
Not bad.
When it takes just too long, like, okay, I get the point, move on. Be because I have ADHD. I actually do. That wasn't a joke. But, you know, maybe that's why I get bored with that stuff. But there were just some moments that just... And because it's, you know, 40 years old, 42 years old, movies back then were just slower.
Yeah. You go into... It is important to know when a movie was made because you to expect what pace things are going to be at.
This was before MTV made us all expect quick cuts.
Well, if you think about it, the British had videos long before MTV.
Well, there were videos before. They were a record company marketing tool. But, you know, I mean, Mike Nesmith had the concept of MTV before MTV.
But from what I understand, the British had, like, shows that they would play videos for like half an hour, like our Friday night videos that we had here before cable came along. And
yeah, videos were a thing before MTV, but MTV was the 24-hour channel that made us expect like lightning fast cuts. Well, lightning fast cuts for the 80s. I don't think they could have conceived of TikTok, but
I mean, most of their programming were those British videos from this time period, you know, before this time period.
The biggest audience Laurie Anderson has ever had.
Yeah.
But going back to the beginning of the movie, coming out of the opening titles, I liked seeing Kelly's character, before we knew who he was, Danny, on the rocks playing clarinet, because there was like a clarinet bit in the score at that point. So we just kind of saw the guy playing it on the beach. It was nice before we even knew who he was. Also, he mimed clarinet really well. I don't know if he actually played or not.
Oh, who knows? I mean, those guys did everything back in the day.
I also, they established early on that Danny, or Sonny rather, Beck's character, works for a record company reproducing album covers for like store displays, in a larger size. Up until now, I've never thought about record companies hiring artists, but somebody's got to design them.
Well, wait a minute, though. Do you mean to tell me they didn't have the ability to blow up a picture
I'm sure they could. It was a
in
conceit.
size.
But I'm saying
Like,
they hire
when was
artists
that?
to like design the covers in the first place,
Well, of course,
which I
that.
never
I
thought
mean,
about.
I was like, what was he like, Storm, Thurgerson, But then, like, no, he's a
Reproducing.
tracer.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And yeah, why is everybody trying to hook him up with their friends and relatives at the start of the film?
Oh, it was so weird. And nobody just says, oh, you can borrow my motorbike as long as you return it in person.
There were weird, in more innocent times moments, like when he's met Danny like three times, and Danny's like, come over to my place and we'll listen to some records.
I hadn't even thought of that.
And part of me wants to go to the sugar daddy joke, but
I picked up some twink on the beach today.
as a musician, I have had randos come to my house. I've put ads in music stores and had some random guitar player come to my house to jam. I've done that, back in the 90s. So, it's not an it wasn't an unusual thing, decades ago. Now I think about it and it's disturbing.
That's funny.
Now, having Sunny on roller skates to look for her seemed like an odd choice until we get the payoff.
Was it really a payoff?
We see he finds her, in this
Yes.
old, decrepit, what's the word I'm looking for? No longer used is another word there. Club where she's skating around. And okay, I figure, okay, now he's got the stage skates, she's got the skates, it's a whole thing. He doesn't put them on at all. In the whole scene with her where she's skating around, he's got the skates, he never puts them back on.
Yeah, there was what I thought you were talking about. The payoff was their one of their numbers.
No. By payoff, I mean, okay, why is he on skates? Oh, because she's going to be on skates and they're going to do a whole thing. They never did the whole thing.
They wind up doing it eventually,
They
though.
did eventually, but they didn't in that scene. It just seemed
Yeah.
weird to put him on skates when he's not going to be skating. Was she trying to cover her accent or not? I could never quite tell.
I think she tried, yeah.
If she was Australian, she sounded more British.
And what was the point of trying to cover the accent, you know?
One thing I wanted to see in the movie that we never got to see, I wanted to see Sonny just fucking deck that other smart-ass artist.
I was kind of surprised to see the smart-ass artist later on, like helping them out. So they were kind of friends, I guess.
It just he was imminently punchable.
Yeah. He was supposed to be a comic relief, but he really wasn't funny.
I don't know.
I think that was the problem there.
I liked that Danny had a connection to Kira. We don't know that early on. He's
Yeah.
just this, old guy that he's kind of, forming a friendship with. Danny's musical number was kind of cringy at first, but then, we get Gene Kelly dancing, and that just made it better.
Well, right, you knew that was coming. It's like you're not gonna have Gene Kelly in the fucking movie without the Gene Kelly dancing. And
Even
it
though
kind
it
of
was like 6 years before he died, it was his last film, I believe.
it's really why this bombed, though, Kids just were not looking for that sort of thing at
No.
that time. And then older people were not gonna go for an Olivia Newton-John movie. But it is one of the better moments of the film, probably second to the intro.
I feel like this movie was just an exercise in self-indulgence in a lot of ways.
And it's funny because she was trading the 50s nostalgia from Grease for the 40s nostalgia. And I was trying to think if this was before or after 1941. And was shocked to find out it was after
It was
1941,
okay.
which was a notorious flop. And they pretty much just said, hold my beer.
But I kind of love that it was just, we're gonna make this ridiculous dance musical. And they didn't even care if it was gonna sell.
Oh, I think they were going for.
I
I
think
mean,
they were hoping it would, but
that's why they brought ELO in.
yeah.
Who, if there was a criminal of music in this movie,
I'm glad I like ELO because
it
if I
was
didn't like
them.
them, this would have been painful. Because it's all ELO all the time.
ELO, I like a lot of ELO, but this was a lot of bad ELO.
I just appreciate Jeff Lynne's writing. Aside from the two Olivia Newton-John songs that everybody knows from this movie, it's pretty much all ELO.
Like, when they ran, like, the couple ELO songs back-to-back, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're not Beethoven's fifth bad ELO.
Well, yeah.
That is the rock-bottom worst ELO you can get. But they're also not Mr. Blue Sky ELO.
Well, Vesta Beethoven was not ELO. That was somebody else.
What's that?
Yeah, that was Vesta Beethoven was not ELO.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm thinking Rollover Beethoven.
Oh, yeah. I forgot they covered that.
Yes. That is the worst ELO.
Fair. But I liked the ELO. The roller skating scene when we finally get him on the skates with her, it was utterly ridiculous, but I didn't hate it. It was... that was the exercise in self-indulgence. It was a bunch of like musical theater choreographers just running wild.
I think I saw there was like an Olympic skater that came that you know helped them with the routine. I don't know if they helped them make the routine up, but it was, you know, you could see it, you know, understood what they were doing there. That wasn't as much of a what the fuck moment as the cartoon.
You knew that was coming, but before we get to that, the first real what the fuck moment, when Danny and Sonny are looking at the club, when he's trying to, you know, Sonny's trying to talk him into it, and we get the dueling eras, the 40s big band and the early 80s rock band. The rock band was clearly a riff on the Tubes.
That was the guy from
was
the
that Tubes.
That was, yes.
Okay. Because they were clearly going for the Tubes there, with a little bit of Devo in the costuming. But
and it might have actually been the Tubes itself, except Amazon Prime just completely... Their X-ray service on this movie was probably the worst I've ever seen, because they didn't actually include the Tubes in his credits. They had the movies he scored.
Oh, okay.
But it's like, this motherfucker is famous for the Tubes.
Yeah, Devo, yeah.
Yeah.
Although that part, the rock band part, did kind of go on and on.
Oh, yeah. And you knew they were going to combine, like when they're playing one another. You just didn't know how strange it was going to be coming together.
I was cool with the duel. You know, it was weird. I enjoyed it. The music was nicely done. But then the 40s band disappears. The big band goes away. And we're just hanging on the rock band for like five more minutes.
And then they come back, and then they combine.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was kind of awkward and kind of, it just didn't work. They needed to cut that. You knew what they were trying to do, but, well, first off, it wasn't really true. There's nothing fucking the same with the big band era and new wave music. It's just, you really have to do a lot of coke to think of that stuff.
Now, the animated segment, for me, it was just the logical progression.
Really?
Like, okay, of course they're going to do an animated part now. It's just, it has reached that level of ridiculous, they're going to go animated. And it looked great. It was very Disney.
It's Don Bluth.
Okay, that's why it looked great.
I'm not sure where he was in his career, but I mean...
He's that makes more sense Bluth than Disney. Yeah, it is his style. Yeah. And he's a fucking genius as an animator.
Of course.
So
yeah.
I was, and I love animation, so I was totally down for that. And again, it's a ridiculous self-indulgent movie. Animation just seemed the next logical step. I mean, at that point I was thinking about recommending it.
And then what happened?
Well, nothing happened. Well, I mean, some things took me in both directions after that. The fashion montage, I think that's what you're talking about.
That could be one of them, sure.
The Kelly's dancing and the weird new waivers made that tolerable for me. Like, yeah, probably the low point of the movie for me, but we have Jane Kelly dancing and a bunch of weird kind of creepy new waivers. I was okay with it.
Now, what would have been cool if they had actually worked out like a love triangle kind of thing between Gene Kelly.
I was expecting that, and I'm really glad they didn't.
The two fighting over her.
Yeah.
would have been a bit, it would have been a logical conclusion, you know, where he's like still living in the 40s and still thinking maybe he could get her.
I like that he had accepted that it was done.
Well, yeah. He was pretty much having everything he wanted come true in the end.
Yeah. It was his, you know, fantasy fulfillment.
The problem is they literally had to pull a conflict with the Deus Ex Machina. Usually the Deus Ex Machina solves the conflict, but they had to have the god come down and create the conflict.
But before we get to that, Sunny has a line, tomorrow is going to be the most beautiful day in the world. I have to be the grammarian. If it was the most beautiful day ever, most beautiful day of all time, cool. Most beautiful day in the world implies that a day is a tangible thing.
Well, it's people running around all over.
It is a that suggests that a day is a tangible object that you can touch that is in the world. No, it is a temporal event. So, you know, of all time or ever makes more sense. I just have to nitpick that. I do like that they crowbarred in a lesson in Greek mythology, and I liked how the movie broke the fourth wall.
And, you know, that plot could have been a really good, you know, if they'd worked that, this could have really worked if it was just a retelling of a Greek myth.
It would have been better, yeah.
1980.
And then, yeah, he goes into the mural in the Zeus scene. It was very Altered States at first. I appreciated that. It was like Altered States meets like 80s video game graphics. It was utterly ridiculous. We get Zeus and I'm going to say Nemesine. Apologies if I got that wrong.
It looked like they were living in a disco.
Yeah.
Like they beamed to the set of Saturday Night Fever.
But that scene was just, for me, ridiculous in a really great way. I didn't need her to do a song afterward.
Oh, yeah. That I started skipping ahead because it was literally just her, a close-up on her singing.
Anytime anybody on screen was singing, it was usually Olivia Newton-John, but those were kind of the low points for me.
But at least it was a number, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. Kind of love the giant dance number to open the club. I was a bit tempted to skim through it because it really did go on and on and on and on,
but there were so many things it was the kitchen sink. There were circus performers, it's why I thought of Rando Express, because it was like they just went out into the street singing, hey, want to be in the movie, can you roller skate?
That country section was really sudden. I thought maybe like there was an editing issue in my copy, but no, you had the same thing.
Oh man, it was brutal.
Where it suddenly switches to a country thing.
That closing number where she's doing just all the different genres, and it just, oh man, that for me was the low point of the movie.
Yeah, true, probably. I like that it didn't work out for him. She didn't quit being amused to be with the guy.
She kind of did, I think.
Well, he meets a waitress at the club who is identical to Kira.
Was she identical or was that Kira?
I like to think that she's identical and Kira did the right thing and went, you know, back to work. I'm the aromantic here, so.
I don't know. I don't think they would do a non-happy ending in this. That's just not what they're doing here.
I mean, life finally threw Danny or Sonny a bone at that point, because up until that point, he was getting screwed left and right, and not in the good way.
He might have had a good way one or two times before.
Well, okay. But I mean, in terms of like, he wanted to get the girl, he didn't get the girl, he wanted to be taken seriously as an artist, nobody gave a fuck. It was all about Danny. So, you know, he got a little something in the end. Incidentally, Xanadu, along with Can't Stop the Music, are responsible for the creation of the Golden Raspberry Awards.
Oh, really?
They were created for this and Can't Stop the Music.
Yeah, you could totally see why.
Sequels and remakes?
Ah, well, they did. Broadway, of course, did this.
$5 million Broadway musical adaptation began previews On May 23rd, 2007, the show, which humorously parodied the plot of the film, was a surprise hit, receiving praise for its satirical approach, and was nominated for several Tonys. There's also a comic book adaptation that appeared in the summer 1980 issue of Marvel Comics Super Special.
Okay. But, I mean, you could understand why, because she had, at least three hit songs in this?
Yeah. The main song, You Gotta Believe There Were Magic, Xanadu, and the one later in the film, I think they were just those two.
No, I'd heard Suddenly before. Okay. The duet with Cliff Richard. Uh-huh. And funny story, I was yesterday days old when I finally figured out that it wasn't The Wizard in Motion. But, as a kid, it was kind of like, I knew it wasn't right.
Yeah.
But it's what I heard. Uh-huh. And it was just kind of like but it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And thank you, closed captioning for The Wheels Are in Motion.
Had the light on. I was literally in my 40s before I realized it was Jet Airliner. On to brains. As you probably picked up by now, I'm recommending it. I'm going for it. It's just an exercise in self-indulgence, and it's not a good movie, but I think it's one you should see.
There's a couple of good numbers in it, but most of this is pretty painful and pretty cringy. I'm going to.
All right, and what have we learned?
We learned, Xana don't, am I right?
Oh, God. So bad I had to react. I normally don't react. And I learned that if you start making changes, then other people start making changes. And before you know it, you've got a lot of people running around doing what they want to do.
Who can have that?
And that's it for Xanadu. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. This one was very, very overhyped for me. So when I finally saw it, I have seen it already. I was a little underwhelmed because my expectations were absurd. It'll be interesting going back to it with corrected expectations.
Yeah, because, it's still a mainstream release, yeah. So I wasn't expecting too much. I haven't seen it yet, so I have no idea.
And we don't have normal movie diets, so, weird and insane to us is a very different thing than it is to most people.
When we see those articles of the worst movie ever, usually we just have a good laugh
at Yeah, I laugh person. At them and say, you've clearly never seen a Neil Breen film.
You haven't seen the horror that I've seen.
And so then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.